Part 3, Modern Philosophy. We now arrive in this essay at the pivot point in human societal and structuring, the Enlightenment Project, and most importantly, the French Revolution. At the end of this essay, sources, and they aren't in any particular order, it's just as I was pulling them off the shelf, for further study in the various ideas proposed or given to you. You can do with them as you will. David Hume, 1711 through 1776, has the advantage of stating his thoughts concisely while still being widely read today. That is a real trick to find these people who will come right out and say what they want to say and do it with little words. So you find someone like that, Hume, even though I don't agree with what he says, I do appreciate him for that. Peter Gay, a historian of the Enlightenment, so I'm going to appeal to an expert and authority. So Peter Gay, a historian on the Enlightenment, says, Hume, more decisively than many of his brethren in the Enlightenment, stands at the threshold of modernity and exhibits its risks and its possibilities. Without melodrama, but with sober eloquence one would expect from an accomplished classicist, Hume makes plain that since God is silent, man is his own master. We must live in a disenchanted world, submit everything to criticism, and make his own way. Just like Justice Kennedy, we make our own decisions. That would be from Peter Gay's book, The Enlightenment and an Interpretation, 1, page 419. So my question is God silent? Is man his own master? Is it a reductio of ratio? Where does justice, charity, hope fit into this thinking? Justice and prudence is ordered to the common good. The drama of life is being, in my particular case, a good wife, a woman, a mother, and a blogger. None of this drama is found in Hume. Justice is needed to define what is good. It's those virtues. The world of Socrates is foreign to this line of thinking. With the telos of man clipped, the Enlightenment thinkers do not know what humans are. Remember, that's defining of terms. Why they exist, final ends, why they're here, and that would be your the anthropology, and what their final ends are, the creation, metaphysics, why they exist, creation, metaphysics. Hume writes, this is a direct quote, life of a man is no greater importance to the universe than that of an oyster, page 3. Sounds just like Peter Singer. And continuing, when I shall be dead, the principles of which I am composed, the atoms, will still perform their part in the universe and will be equally useful in the grand fabric as when they compose this individual's creatures. This individual creature, that's from his writing on suicide, page 4. Hume is not angry towards religion, nor makes a show of rejecting it. He just doesn't take religion seriously at all. In Hume's world, Jesus and religion have been considered, rejected, and now they're just ignored. And that is where we are. If we look around, we'll see that that is exactly where we are today. Now I'm turning to definitely the modern period. Karl Marx from 1818 to 1883. In politics, Charles Darwin, 1809-1882, in science, and Friedrich Nietzsche, 1844 to 1900, in philosophy, are the protagonists, respectfully, of the Communist Manifesto, a doubling down on the atomist view of nature espoused by the pre-Socratics, and the love of self above all things in philosophy. All three men and their respective adherents have one thing in common, the absence of God. For Marx, he will ask, what has God done for man? It is time for man to rule and create his own utopia. Darwin with his bulldog, Thomas Huxley, 1825 to 1895, will champion the same in the sciences. It's evolution, genetics, survival of the fittest who rules the creative universe. Aristotle's classification of nature's forms are finite. Nietzsche's insistence that since God is dead, we have killed him, modern man, a new man, an Übermensch, must emerge. These ideas usher in not a promised utopia, but the bloodiest century ever known to man. And it was kind of interesting talking about, it's not in the paper, this is just a bonus, that in World War I, the soldiers in the line, you know, in those lines that fighting back and forth, had little snips of Nietzsche in their back pocket, you know, sneaking in a little read on prescribed philosophy, that just like with William of Ockham. Warfare, genocide, slavery, abortion, rejection of the fundamental cell of society seen in marriage and the family, are the results our ancestors could never grasp. 2,500 years of human striving toward a just society seems bodacious. Ideas have consequences, and bad ideas worked out over time are disastrous. Consider the word freedom. I could propose to a general audience that freedom is a good thing. I could post this on social media, and there would be hardly any disagreement. Yeah, we all think freedom's great. And that would seem like a good thing. But on closer reflection, I would find some agree that freedom is good only insofar as it allows a person to do what they want. And that's a hallmark of individualism. It is the defiance of the accuser, non servium. As they will not serve the one, they become slaves to their own passions. A much smaller group would say freedom is good because it allows for love. Love properly understood is a sincere desire for the other's good. It's rooted in virtue and with a final result of happiness. And happiness, remember defining those terms. Happiness, as Aristotle would propose, is the goal for which all man longs. Christians would elevate this idea and say man was created for blessed eternal happiness. A profound union between God in man made possible by the gratuitous gift of salvation from his Son through the operation of the Holy Spirit. Our goal today is the same as it was from the dawn of man. It is to train our hearts to know the truth when we hear it, and then to engage our will to act on that truth. We cannot do this on our own, as the Pelagius or Marx would suggest. We are not automatons, immutably fixed by our DNA, as Darwinism or the pre-Socratics will propose. God is most assuredly not dead, as so many, including myself, can testify. Man needs the grace of the Holy Spirit so that we can know the truth without despair, but with hope, and to act with courage. We are not free to determine what is good and evil any more than we are able to dispense with the law of gravity. To propose this idea in our generation that we're not free to dispense with good and evil will require courage born from an experiential relationship with our saving God. Theological knowledge does not suffice. Claiming Christ's promise that those who hear his voice will know the truth and be set free suffices. And I saw that very clearly. A former politician, when pressed on a particular hot-button topic in a very secular setting, when he said that Christ promises that his followers will know the truth and the truth will set him free, that resonated with the people in that audience, and it still resonates with people today. Thank you. And to the next time, Fides et Ratio.